When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What would you say if I told you there's a book that can teach you how to win The Bachelor?
What would you say if I told you producers caught multiple finalists reading that book in this season that's currently airing?
What would you say if I told you the producers don't want anyone to know that their show has been compromised?
How do we know all this? We wrote that book.
I'm Lizzie Pace.
And I'm Chad Colchin.
We're the authors of How to Win the Bachelor and the hosts of the Game of Roses podcast, a bi-weekly podcast where we break down all the biggest plays, errors, and MVPs in the game of reality television.
Listen to Game of Roses wherever you get your podcasts and go to howtowinthebachelor.com to get our book.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, Dave here, and this is my wife, Kathy.
Hello!
And you are listening / looking at The Cinemile, the podcast where we walk home from the movies. Today, we are walking to a movie called Diego Maradona, and you can see us if you're at our live show, and if you're listening to it in your ears, you can't see us because that's how podcasts
and work. And we've never filmed ourselves before, so apologies for the fact that we're now hugely self-conscious. We just bought a selfie stick from a street vendor for £8, bartered him down from £15.
It's and got a Union Jack on it. Look at that.
Very weird.
Can you see that?
I don't think you can film a selfie stick.
Yeah, I just did.
Anyway, we look like complete
it's
idiots.
It's a whole new world, video.
We're used to looking like idiots as we wander the streets podcasting, but we're taking it to next level here, so we need to be quick. Pumped for this movie, can't wait.
Yes, and we have a very special guest who will be joining us on stage very soon, the director, Asif Kapadia. And
yes.
I am very keen to meet him and talk about Senna and Amy and Diego Maradona once we've seen it. What do you know about Diego Maradona? Because neither of us know anything about football or him.
Well, it's really interesting because we just watched Senna and
I
know nothing
way.
About F1, and actually I had never even heard of Senna. So, and I absolutely loved it. So I know bits about Maradona and clearly I can follow football, so I should be in this one.
Can you though? Kathy, I've never met somebody who hates football as much as Kathy.
I can follow it though. I know he's, anyway, three things about Diego Maradona. I know he's really good at football.
That's not a fact.
I know. He's got massive hair.
Of course
hair.
He's good at football.
He's got massive hair. And I know that he did a load of drugs.
Okay, so two of those things you could have just gathered from the poster. The drugs. Okay, and what about the hand of God moments? You know about that?
No.
It's a famous handball that he did in one of the World Cups. I think against England.
I hope you're not spoiling the movie for me, because that
crossing
could be
a
big
stop
point here.
That's not a spoiler.
Did you selfie stick and spoiler, cross the road?
Spoiler, he uses his hand. And it's a called football,
anyway,
so you're not supposed to do
Coors
that.
We're at the Coors Zone in Bloomsbury. We've never been here before, but this is where the movie was on at a time that suited us.
Yeah, there it is. We're going to go see the movie now.
Yeah.
There you go. Sorry, I don't know how to film things. We'll see you on the other side.
Bye.
Diego Maradona.
Cuando vos entras a la cancha, se va la vida, se va todo.
Diego nació en un lugar muy difícil, la parte más pobre de la ciudad capital.
A mí la pelota era el juguete más lindo que había. Esa era mi salvación.
Hi, we're out. We've just seen Diego Maradona. Kathy, what do you think of that?
I loved it. I'm amazed that I could watch a movie for an hour and a half that is half Italian, half Spanish, and all about football, and that I could be like that into it and like fist pumping, like so excited when he scored goals.
You had a lot of fist pumps.
I loved it because, I mean, to me, it's basically like a work of like fiction because I've never heard of any of it before. And the only thing I knew about Italian 90 was that Ireland hit the quarterfinals.
Yeah, we had a brief cameo as well. It was the last great moment of Irish football.
Yeah. But, God, yeah, it was amazing. Like, I can't believe, like, such a brilliant subject matter for a documentary, because, like, to have that kind of like he plays for Napoli. He's like a god in that city, and then
they betray him.
It's Italy or he betrays them. Argentina in like a World Cup semi-final in like the Napoli stadium. Like it completely blew my. Like, I can't believe that happened. Yeah. Like if that happened in a fiction movie, I would think it was ridiculous.
It's stranger than fiction.
Yes, but it's also amazing.
It was all. You're right though. It was almost better for us because I didn't know any of this happened or what was going to happen. So it was all just a revelation, really.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I felt really like moved by it as well. He's such a charismatic. I felt more moved by this one than I did by Senna. I think maybe because we saw so much of his family and he's a very emotional person and we saw like he to be so hated and so revered in such a short period of time is just this crazy emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, I cried several times.
Really?
Yeah, no, I thought what it was all the family stuff, him as a 15-year-old carrying this burden,
yeah.
and just the sweetness, the sweet simplicity of his dreams. All his dream was to buy a house for his parents.
It's so sweet.
You know, he never dreamed of the World Cup or anything.
But enough about us. We need to get to the live show.
All right.
We're just doing a normal podcast.
Why don't we go talk to the director about the movie he made? Please welcome onto stage us, Dave and Kathy, from the Cinemile.
Hello, can you hear us?
Hey!
Yes, we exist in real life as well. Alright, thanks for watching that excruciating video. Now, we're going to do a live podcast, and we'd like to invite to the stage the director who, they said, revolutionised the documentary. Not our quote. He's Oscar-winning, but it's his quote. He just said it about himself.
Oscar-winning, BAFTA-winning, Asif Kapadia.
Woo! Have a seat, Asif. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yes, this is what podcasts look like.
Yeah, I've listened to many, never seen one on the inside.
This is it. We asked them to perfectly recreate our living room.
And it's always a sofa.
Yeah, it's just like our globe at home. So we saw your movie.
Yeah, I noticed.
Yeah, you do. You saw the video.
I'm glad you didn't go, you know, during the film and podcast, you know.
No, we recorded that for our own personal use later. I think that's okay, right? Yeah. I didn't see any warnings about that. So tell us why Senna, Amy, and now Diego. Why Diego? How did you end up there?
It's an interesting one because I'm a football fan. And I knew about Diego Maradona, probably knew more about him before I made the film than I did about Senna or Amy. Only because I watch football, I remember the World Cups. I read a book about him when I was a student in the mid to late 90s about his life, which was an amazing book. And his journey as a character, the kind of poor poverty that he came from and what he achieved, but also the crazy kind of... You know, the mess that he kind of got into. I thought when I was a student making short films, wouldn't it be great one day to make a film about Diego Maradona? So it started in like 96, 97, the germ of the idea.
And how did you get all that footage? Because this, like, your style is very much you stay in that archive footage. You feel like you're there. But, like, you must have had... How many hundreds of hours of footage did you have at your disposal? And then how do you distill that?
So it's a weird one. Making these films it's part kind of filmmaking and kind of, you know, creative and art. A large section of it is almost detective work and investigation, and saying, I think there must be, you know, there's an interesting story that I've heard which takes place at this point in someone's life. We've got to find a way to visualize it. We've got to find a way to show it. Someone somewhere's got some photographs or some audio or an answer phone message. So then we dig around and we try and meet the people who would have been in that moment in time. And if in this case, they may be in Buenos Aires, they may be in Naples, they may live in Rome. And you just talk to people until you get to someone who was there. And you'll be amazed. There's a form of a photograph or some sort of record or a paparazzi was going by or something happened. You go, there you go, there's a moment. Or if it's not the exact moment, it'd be something similar. So that the story is kind of worked out. I interview people, do audio interviews, But then at the same time, we're looking at for visuals. And sometimes the visual informs the audio, and sometimes the audio comes first. But it's all being rewritten at the same time, as was the case with Senna and Amy as well.
And did you always intend it to be based in this sort of very focused period of his life in Italy, or did that happen as you were doing that process?
We actually researched everything. So I always have a very long version of my films, which are like sometimes 4 or 5 hours long. And we screen them, and you have to bring packed lunch and everything, you know. And they're really messy, and I bring...
What, your packed lunch or the...
The packed lunch is a mess because it's dark, you know.
No,
the films are kind of purposely, they're not finished, you know. We're showing it to kind of a close group of trusted people just to gauge where do they kind of stay with it, where do they lose interest, where does it pick up again. And in this film, it took originally, I don't know, has anyone here actually seen it in the audience? This is good on a podcast. Okay, great. Who's seen Amy yes. here, by the way? And Senna? Okay, so you many of you will know different films, so you know the style. So
the rest of you don't know who any of us are.
Yeah.
This is a great start.
They're here for the other thing that got switched. So it took 45 minutes to get to Naples in an earlier cut. And it was half an hour after Naples, so it was a much longer film. But through this kind of work in progress screenings, we figured out, actually, it seems like the heart of the movie has to be... It starts... Well, no matter what we do, it always starts when he gets to Italy. And that's where he becomes the best player in the world. That's where he gets to the high point. But also, all of his problems begin there. So it felt like we have to go with the story. And my aim is always, you know, with the team, to make this into a film that you see at the cinema, yeah, as with the other two. So rather than doing TV series now where you kind of can go on forever, I wanted it to feel like a feature, which means you have to make some tough calls.
I would recommend getting Kathy into your next 5-hour cut session, because she is the most ruthless editor I've ever met. And also, she doesn't know anything about football or Diego Maradona, and was enthralled by this, weren't you?
I mean, I was so shocked at how much I loved this movie, because I loved Senna. Amy Winehouse was amazing, even though, you know, I found it like deeply upsetting. But this is different because he's still alive, and honestly, I knew nothing of the story, and I didn't know Senna either.
You're the audience.
Do you make these movies for Kathy?
Yeah, because it's interesting, because if you are a football nut, then generally the first thing is, oh, why don't you put that in? And I think this is really interesting, and it should have had more of that. And so it's always the difficult balance is people who know their football or know about Diego Maradona, and people, honestly, like yourself, who don't know anything. Because I'm almost more interested in getting people who don't watch football to come and see Diego Maradona, as I do with Senna. You know, you don't have to be into Formula One to watch it. If you are, you're going to get something else. You're going to get a different reading of it. You don't have to love Amy to go and watch Amy, because it's essentially they're about characters.
Yeah.
Really interesting characters, hopefully.
And what was the difference in making this movie versus the previous, in having kind of the main character still alive?
Do you know, it's almost the opposite of what people would assume. By having someone who's alive, you'd think it'd be more difficult, and there'd be more involvement. But actually, I think I would say now there was more involvement when we made Senna and Amy with, you know, the people in control of the estates or family members. There was more of an opinion than this one, which honestly nobody from his team has seen the film. Like, we tried to show it to Maradona before we finished it. I was like, the first person I want to show it to is Diego Maradona. It's really important, because I interviewed him 4 or 5 times. I went to see him when he was living in Dubai, and pretty much he has a sofa just like this.
That is it. Yeah. We asked for it to be shipped
in
from Dubai.
And he was sat on his sofa watching his favourite team, Boca Juniors, on TV while I was interviewing him. And when he went to the toilet, I kind of muted the sound. I thought it might be easier if we just turned the sound off. But I did his interviews with him, and I met him 4 or 5 times, and the plan was to go back and show him the film when it was nearly done, just before we locked it off. And we never could get to him. It was one of those, he was travelling the world, you know, he was really busy, he was going to be at the World Cup. And they said, come to Moscow, you know, last year's World Cup. And I'm like, I don't think it would be the right time to show him the film. If anyone saw Maradona at the World Cup, it was not the right time to show him the film.
What was he doing at the World Cup?
Yeah, anyone see it? I mean, he was not in a good way.
Right, okay.
He was not in a good way. There's a couple of shots at the very end of the film when he's quite big. Watch it. That's from the World Cup in Moscow. So in the end, he hasn't seen it, and his kind of lawyer and agent hasn't seen it. His ex-wife has, kind of his trainer, Signorini, all of the other people in the film, his children have seen it, but Diego Maradona himself still hasn't seen the film.
Wow.
So, weirdly enough, that didn't happen with Senna and Amy. You know, we had to show it to the entourage. We had to show it to the family members or the estate, and kind of the stakeholders in the legacy. But in this case, by being alive, they really didn't care.
Do you think he's...
Or they were a bit worried about what was in the film.
Well, you don't really,
depending on the reading of it, you know, that they don't want to know what's in the film.
Well, you don't pull, you don't gloss over any of the sort of the upsetting things about his character, and you know, certainly you focus a lot on the infidelities and the illegitimate love child in the 80s. So I mean, you had to sit on that sofa and talk to him about uncomfortable subjects like that. How did he take that?
I tried on the first interview asking him a few I thought easy questions, and straight away he said, "Don't bring her up. I never want to hear about her ever again." I'm like, okay, cross that one out. Let's talk about, you know, your first agent who essentially he hired two Argentinian cameramen to follow Diego Maradona around. Back in 1981, Diego Maradona's first agent hired a couple of guys because he thought this guy's going to be a superstar, so we must record it because one day he's going to be huge in America. So a lot of the footage, a lot of the behind the scenes footage was shot specially for Diego Maradona.
Wow.
So that's really like the beginnings of this movie. And so I mentioned the agent. I said, you know, tell us about Jorge, who hired his cameraman. Don't bring him up. He stole from me. I'm like, okay, cross that one out. So it was really like, these were the easy questions. I hadn't got to page two, which had the tough ones. So I thought, let's just keep it simple. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about your mum. Let's talk about your dad. And then he was more comfortable and happier. And he was actually much more comfortable talking about his background, his childhood, the poverty that he came from. He was able to talk about that. When it got tricky, it took a while, and I ended up saving them up for like the third or the fourth interview, when I said, I've got to deal with his issues. They're in the film. I've got to talk to him about it. And as you mentioned, it is to do with his addiction. It is to do with children that he had that he didn't recognize, relationships with women, relationships with the underworld. Because at times this feels a bit like watching a kind of early Scorsese film or something, you know, it's kind of Mean Streets at times. So all of that, it took a while to get there. We did get there. Every time you hear his voice in the film, he's talking about his issues. But it was one of those, he got quite annoyed at one point. He kind of looked me in the eye and he was like, you know, you've got a real nerve asking me these questions to my face. You've got a nerve. Now, I don't speak Spanish or Italian, so I was getting a live translation. And generally when he's talking, I'm kind of nodding and smiling. So he's saying this to me and I'm nodding and smiling. You know, yeah. And then eventually the translation comes. I'm like, oh, shit.
Did you say, I read a previous interview where you said that his daughters were in part what got you access to this footage?
So the babies, the kids in there, that Dalma and Janina, are, we spoke to them, who are now in their 30s, low 30s, and they've got their own children now. And they were, Dalma, his first daughter, was the person really who spoke to his mum, her mum, in order to say, you know, I think you should be a part of this. And they also spoke to him. Because he was very much of the, this film's called Diego Maradona, it's about me. Why do you need to talk to anyone else? And we were like, well, you know, the way
Maradona.
They work, we talk to everyone. And he's like, yeah, but why? You know, it's about me. But it was, to get to him wasn't that easy. So actually, just for him to understand, we had to talk to his ex-wife. We had to talk to people who were there as part of his life. The kids were very good at kind of opening those doors, yeah.
You talk a lot in the movie about, well, you don't talk, but your movie sort of presents this idea of these two personalities. You know, you've got Diego and you've got Maradona, and I think it's his coach who sort of brilliantly puts it like that. It sounds like you interviewed Maradona. Did you ever get to meet Diego?
It's a good question. You know, if you imagine there's a spectrum and you've got Diego there and Maradona there, I felt while we were making the film that the person that I was meeting was on the far end of the Maradona spectrum, but I'm making a film about Diego here. So it's almost like I'm meeting someone and interviewing him and he's alive, but I'm making a film about someone else who's no longer with us.
And yeah, very so, much his younger self.
Yeah, you know, that young kind of vulnerable character that arrives in Naples with the kind of bright eyes and smile and a big fluffy hair isn't the guy that I met. Now, I don't know if that happens to all of us, but particularly if you've lived a life like he has led and actually died a few times. You know, he's been pronounced dead about three or four times. Then he comes back and he's got a TV show. And then he dies. And then something else happens. He's kind of incredible. He's made many more comebacks than Jesus. So I think I the person, in a way, that I was making the film about, who arrived in Naples, is no longer with us. And that kept coming up in the interviews about, I wish you could go back. I wish you could go back to that guy. So this concept of the split personality came out of a lot of the interviews. But it was his trainer, Signorini, Fernando Signorini, who's one of the key voices in the film, who really, I would say, knows Diego Maradona better than Diego Maradona does. He knows his body and his mind better than anyone. He really summed it up as, you know, literally as Diego and as Maradona. And he loved one guy, and the other guy he didn't ever want to be near. But yeah, I'm meeting that guy at that end of the spectrum at this point of his life. He's nearly 60 now, but you know, his body's lived a lot more than 60 years.
So I mean, it sounds in some ways that that almost might have benefited you if you're making a movie about someone who's no longer there and you're following off Amy and Senna, and they do feel very much like a three piece, don't they? Yeah,
I mean, they are kind of a trilogy of films, and the idea, if I was going to do a third one, the challenge was to make a film about someone who was alive, because it was a different challenge, and because he's a very tricky character to nail down and to talk to and to meet. And it's only through meeting someone do you understand, well, is he the most reliable witness for his own story? You know, we do a lot of really forensic research, a bit like, you know, investigative kind of detective work or journalism. But then you meet someone, and if they say the absolute opposite in your interview, do you go with what he said because he's saying it, or do you go with what all of the evidence is saying? I think that was the interesting challenge. His trainer, Signorini, did say to us, you know, when I was about to go meet Maradona, he said, you know, be aware, you're going to be in the presence of one of the world's greatest liars. You know, that's what he is. He's someone who's always creating his own narrative. He always comes up with a version of his truth, which is what makes him interesting and challenging, I guess.
He's fascinating, and again, as I didn't know any of this watching the movie, and I'm paraphrasing, but somebody speaks about that World Cup game where he does the hand of God, and they said, this is why everyone loves him and why he's so famous, because on one hand he's just scored this goal which is, you know, demonstrates that he's like the best football player in the world, and the other one just shows what a cheat he is. And that was fascinating. And yeah, and he does have that cheeky kind of, like, watching the movie I very much felt sympathetic towards him, and I felt like he is someone I would have wanted to meet, and it's really fascinating to see, like, the toll drugs can take on somebody, which obviously is in the Amy doc as well, but also the fame, which is in both of the docs, which is just so fascinating. And then what they were doing to his body, like, before those matches, as someone who has lots of back pain, I was wincing there, like, injecting him before matches, and he's doing cocaine for like 4 days in a row, then he's coming off. Like, his body must have just been destroyed.
It was he was, you know, it was the 80s in Naples.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this idea of how athletes were treated, if you've got an injury, they give you an injection of some drug, and then when he went out at night, he would take another drug, and then he would somehow say, well, on, you know, he'd go out Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and he'd start training on Thursday, Friday in order to play again. So he talks about a typical week in his life, which, you know, it's just unheard of. It's quite crazy. But a lot of it is all, you know, numbing the pain in one form or another, mm-hmm. whether it's kind of professionally or personally. And I think that's the interesting thing, that his life is part Senna because he's like this Latin American hero, but it's also part Amy because he is actually a bit of a lost child at times who just needs a cuddle and needs his mum and dad. And, you know, but he as a child was taken away from home. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you're a footballer. At the age of 15, he's basically the main earner. He gets them out of a shanty town, gets them a home, and gets swept off to Europe. And so that challenge of dealing with it, he ends up turning to drugs and is still, you know, trying to stay away from kind of addiction and temptation.
Yeah, and especially, it must be such a strange thing to have been so physically fit in your youth and to be so unhealthy now. It's really sad, actually. And I loved how you told the film and that we didn't see what he looks like now until the very end, because I actually hadn't realised, and it was really shocking. And yeah, we kind of wanted to get into talking about your filmmaking, which is so interesting, the way you follow, for all the movies, the footage, and only the footage, which is why people have talked about you and reinventing the documentary, because there's no talking heads, your voice is never there. It's just the people who've been in that situation, and it's the footage in very linear fashion, albeit there's some back to the childhood. How did you develop that style? And how did you... Because Senna was your first documentary, right? You were a fiction short film before that.
I've made feature films previously, mm-hmm. before Senna. But all of my short films and my feature films were very visual. The stories were always told with the images. So when I started to make Senna, there was just this instinct... Because I didn't come from a documentary background, and often kind of documentary filmmakers will start with an interview and they'll interview someone on camera and the visuals come to kind of intercut with what is said in an interview. Whereas I have always come at it the opposite way, which is I always start with the visuals and do a lot of research to say what already exists. And particularly with Senna, because he wasn't alive when I started making the film, I can't interview him. And I wanted the story to be told from his point of view. That was the big thing. If I write a script for a fiction film or tell a fiction film, I want the central character to narrate the story. So I wanted to do a documentary in the same way. Now, if they're not alive, I've got to find a way for Ayrton Senna to talk. I've got to find a way for Amy to talk. So Senna was very eloquent, very well educated, was an amazing kind of intellect, and he would express everything that he was doing and took it very seriously and personally. And he also had a very kind of deep spirituality. He could express himself. So I was like, his interviews are amazing. If we keep looking, we'll find a way for him to tell his life story. With Amy, it was slightly different because for a period when she was young and she was kind of happy and clean before fame, really, she was really eloquent, witty, intelligent. And then when fame came along, that's when kind of her trouble started. We had a real problem. She stopped talking. And that's when the idea came, her lyrics are her voice. Mm-hmm. And if I can highlight the lyrics on screen, she can keep talking even when she, in interviews, shut down. So for each film, it's often the director's role is to have a very simple concept. With Senna, it was just like, let him tell the story. Let's stay in the present. If you do it with interviews, the audience will become aware very quickly. Well, you're interviewing everyone but him. Did he not want to be a part of the film? Is he not around? They start thinking about the end point, and I want them to forget the end point. So with each of them, the idea is to tell the story, but to find one simple idea which makes the film unique. So with Amy, it was the lyrics for me. And with Maradona, we knew we had him there, so we had his voice. But it was actually just focusing on one period that was a microcosm of a very long life, where Senna and Amy died. You know, Senna died at 34, Amy died at 27, Diego's 60, still going. So it's twice as long a period to deal with, but you've still got the same screen time. So we had to make some tough calls.
Oh,
so that whole style is where the kind of visual style came from.
So do you think if Senna hadn't been your first documentary and you had access to a subject, it might have been different?
I think partly for me, the instinct for doing that film was, I do love sport, so I've watched a lot of these races, and the idea of, I like the drama of the kind of reality that comes from certain characters in sport. And in that case, it was like the rivalry that made it work, Senna and Prost, two people that expressed themselves via driving, which is a really weird thing. But you know, he sort of drove a certain way and his great rival drove another way. Amy found a way of expressing herself. I never really thought about it. Amy was like a method actor. The way she performed, she was a jazz musician. Depending on her mood, that's how she's going to sing. She never sang the same way twice, and I found that really interesting. That's why she was never going to be a perfect pop star, because they just went up, sing the bloody record. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, I'm going to change the lyrics because I feel different today. And I found that really amazing. So it's always just about expressing the character via whatever it is they do as a profession. So Maradona plays football, like you mentioned earlier, the handball and the greatest goal ever, 3 minutes apart. That's him. He's a street guy. He's a cheat. He's cunning. He's also the best player in the world. Mm-hmm. All in one body. And I think the idea is, how do you show that? That's always the aim of the films. Not an opinion of a talking head. Let the images tell you the story at each time. That's what makes them, hopefully, movies.
It's what makes them so unique as well, I think. Which is why, like, you know, you're such a kind of substantive director, because it's so fascinating to watch. And it was with Amy, it was the subject matter I knew very well. And what really surprised me watching it was, I realised I didn't know her lyrics because of how she sings, and obviously she had a couple of really big hits that you know the choruses of. But I was like, oh my god, she's an amazing writer. And I was so pleased that you had the lyrics on screen, because I would never have realised.
I didn't know she, you know, really, she created the music as well. She played the guitar, she wrote the songs, she would design the tracks, and then producers would come along and add the music, and great producers worked with her. But I personally loved her music the most when you stripped away all the production and just hear the raw voice and emotion each time. And so with all of these films, I guess it's about stripping away what you think you already know. Mm-hmm. With Senna trying to get under the skin of this guy and get into his head, even though when he's racing, you know, he's 200 miles an hour going round and round in circles wearing a helmet, you can't even see him. I'm like, how can we get into his mind so you understand what he's going through? And same with Amy, who on screen, you know, a lot of people thought she's in a mess, look at her, she's, you know, she's stupid, she can't be that clever. Then you realise she was so smart, so intelligent, so sharp, and those lyrics, like you said, are amazing. And Maradona's another kind of end. He's really smart and really cunning and brilliant at what he does. So I guess if they have something in common, they're all super intelligent, and they found a way to express themselves through whatever field they excelled in.
That's interesting how you describe, you know, stripping these characters back. And you spend hundreds of hours with them, and which is very interesting, particularly for Senna and Amy, because I presume you've never met them in reality. So, like, How does that sit with you, this sort of idea of getting so intimate with a subject matter who you've never met? And you know, is it almost like you're crossing a barrier? Because they must feel like intimately, almost like friends or family to you. Almost.
We spend years making them. You know, Senna was 5 years. Amy and Maradona were about 3 years each. And a lot of it is just spent when we find this footage. It's not dated. You don't know when it took place. So a lot of the time is just looking at their eyes and looking at their haircut or their body shape and trying to guess, is that 1987 or is it 1981? You know, you spend a lot of time studying them, and generally with these films, there is a moment when you can say, Amy's eyes are really bright, she's really happy, and then it's gone. Something's gone in her eyes. Same thing happened with Maradona. There's a turning point where you can see something changed in their lives, and now they just look inherently unhappy. And often, it's the moment when they succeed. The moment when they reach the height of fame is often linked to suddenly there's an unhappiness there. And with Amy, it was, you know, she becomes successful, Back to Black comes out, everyone loves the tracks, but it's her relationships in a bad way and in a mess, and that fame, she's not built to deal with it. Maradona, it's winning the World Cup. You know, it's almost winning the World Cup at the height of fame. Suddenly he looks terrified when he's got the World Cup and he goes home, and that's when he makes the decision to deny his son. You know, so at the same point at the height of fame is when he decides to lie, and then you look at it the next shot and he's like, something's changed. And so a lot of it is just studying to understand their personality and their characters, and then you're digging in to say, why, what happened, how do I show that, who was there at the time, who can I interview? And that's the process of kind of the investigation part of it.
And a similar thing happens to Senna, particularly towards the end and the issues with the technicalities of the car. And I loved the very end of Senna, spoiler alert for the end of, well, it's real life, isn't it?
Well, I didn't know, and somebody told me before.
Okay, well, I won't spoil what happens.
You can do the match
of
the day. Turn away now.
yeah, exactly. There's a line. I think it's the closing line of the movie where he's asked in an interview something like, "What's your favorite memory? What's your favorite racing moment?" And it's go karting. It's that sort of going back to the childhood. So even after all those successes, He ran out of sort of fuel chasing these highs and just reminisced about those glory days. And it feels like, as you say, there's a commonality with all three of this success being a trap almost.
Yeah, with Senna, it was, you know, his great rival was someone you'd never heard of. It was a guy that was a go-kart driver who Senna never beat. And it was just this idea, there was a simplicity. It wasn't about money, it wasn't about politics, it was just pure racing. And that's what he loved. With Amy, she was like a jazz singer. She just wanted to sing. She didn't want all the fame. And with Maradona, in a way, he just liked to play. And of course, the politics and the drugs and the bands and everything that goes wrong in his life takes away his simple ability to go and play football. So weirdly enough, if there's a theme, there's a simplicity in all of their lives, which they just love doing, but they're really good at it. They become successful. And becoming successful means the thing they love is taken away. And I think that is evidently a theme. It's not a conscious decision when I started the films, but that came out of the process of research and editing.
And it's the vested interest. So with, you know, with Senna, he's locked into this car that he was dying to race, and it's suddenly no good anymore because they've kind of changed
it. It's about politics as well. Yeah. You know, it's about the system that each of them is fighting against, a big system. And they're always slightly outside the system, I feel. That I'm interested in those characters that are outsiders. Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason Amy felt much sadder than the other two is because while Senna and Maradona are locked into big money contracts, there's a point in the Amy documentary where actually she's not committed to any more gigs. And then she goes to do them because it seems like familial pressure or pressure from her manager. And it's when it's so sad to watch, because actually if someone was really looking out for you in your life, that's not what you would be doing. And there was no financial obligation. That's what's so astounding about it. The other two, I get to a point, you know, Maradona wants to leave. They won't let him. He's locked into a contract. You have to play. And that moment in Maradona when we see it flipping and he's like the belle of the ball. And this actually got quite a laugh in our cinema, but I don't know if you intended that, when it cuts to his Christmas party and he's on his own and because it was such a shocking moment, I think
it's enough.
Nervous laughter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it was such a high and such a low.
Wow.
And yeah, the other thing that got a laugh in our cinema was The Hand of God.
Well, there's
still
a lot of...
In France, they clapped during that.
Of course. Well, there's still a lot. I would imagine there's a lot of
it's
English
really
people.
It's really interesting
here today,
how
right?
these films actually, when particularly Maradona, wherever I go in the world or whoever I talk to, everyone has a personal connection. So I was in Dublin when we showed the film, and everyone started booing when Ireland got knocked out by Italy. Of course, Ireland. Then I talked to an Australian journalist, and they'll go, "Oh yeah, yeah, he knocked us out of the World Cup in 1994 for the qualifying." You go, "Oh yeah, I forgot." So everyone had their kind of experience with Maradona because it's football, I guess. Everywhere mm-hmm. you go. So in Italy, they view it one way, depending on if it's southern Italy or northern Italy. And in Argentina, it's very emotional for them watching their yeah. film about their kind of young hero. And in England, obviously, there's a lot of people. You've got to kind of undo the hand of God.
How do you guys feel in the crowd there? How do you feel about Diego Maradona right now? Give us a cheer if you think he's a great... We've got a thumbs up. That's great for a podcast. Thank you. Go ahead, shout. If you really... If you really think Diego Maradona is a misunderstood character, give us a cheer. Woo! If you think he's just an awful cheating prick, give us another cheer. Woo! Oh, wow, yeah. Right, still a lot of hatred here.
We need That's to take the show on later. The road to Ireland. We get a very different reaction to that
no,
question.
No, it's Thierry Henry we have the issue with.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's the same move.
He's the nice guy, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Do you feel, having like gotten so close to these three people... Do you feel a particular connection with one in particular, all of them? Or,
I mean, they're all different because you spend so much time in their life almost and meeting everyone around them. You know, I'm aware of lots of people now around Amy, and some of her first manager, Nikki, is a mate of mine now, you know.
Oh, he came across so well in the documentary.
He's really amazing and yeah. sweet, and so they become friends, and people within the Senna, you know, Senna now, if I see him race, I've had Alain Prost still, like a few weeks ago, having a go at me in the press, so you end up becoming part of the story because I made the film, you know, the clue is in the title, it's called Senna. So obviously it's not that pro Prost. But he is like, he's four times world champion. He's still alive. He's got a great life, but he's still really pissed off with me for making the film in a way.
Well, he does come across as the villain in a way. And I'm not saying that you made that happen.
He's just the antagonist to our protagonist.
I'm just showing a rivalry. Yeah, exactly. If you love sport, they don't all love each other when they're racing each other. They're not all mates before they box. You know, they hate each other. And then they can be mates in retirement. And Senna didn't get that chance. But in this case, you know, I've met family. I know Fernando Signorini. I know all of these people around Diego Maradona. So you just, you know, and the question that gets asked a lot is, oh, who's better? Is it Messi or Ronaldo or Maradona? And so you end up getting involved in the arguments as well. The answer is Maradona.
And Amy Winehouse's dad wasn't happy with you, right, after that?
I mean, he's the only person, but, you know, the nature of these films is I'm just showing what happened.
Exactly, yeah.
Again, it's not talking heads, not my opinion. People did what they did, and we have to do and the essence of the story. Everyone else who's seen the film, they may not have said it publicly, but privately, they've all said, it's honest, the film's straight, that's what happened. You know, we needed someone on the outside. I'm not in the music business. I don't owe anyone anything. Mm-hmm. I don't want an album or something. I mean, it would be nice, but I wasn't in it for that. And so it was like, I just wanted to show what was happening to be truthful to her. Yeah. That's what happens during the films. You start kind of, in a way, getting involved in these characters, and then you're just like, you want to do right by Amy. And we've got to somehow reveal the truth, which... Everyone involved found it very difficult to speak up.
I think the St. Lucia footage was the footage for me that was just devastating to think of. You've taken time to look after yourself and get away, because the English paparazzi were so awful to her, and to get away from that, and then for your dad to come with his own reality TV show and film it, that is so telling as footage. That's the kind of footage where a talking head would have just ruined it, because they're telling us what we can see. And yeah, I find that really, really, like, I nearly wanted to turn it off at that point because it was just really sad.
Do you find it hard to remove yourself or your own judgments and biases from this thing?
It's a good question, because I suppose if I were making things for the BBC or somewhere where you traditionally have to now have the other point of view. I'm making movies. You're allowed to have a point of view. You're allowed to say, this is what I think. This is what I want to show. It's not about trying to be impartial. I'm very partial. You know, I do a lot of research. I talk to everyone. I spend years making the films. I have an opinion. My job is to show it. We have lawyers. We have everyone. Everything has to be kind of okayed before it can get out on the big screen. And so I'm not interested in making impartial work. I want to have an opinion and express it, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. And then, you know, the audience can take it as they want. You know.
Yeah.
And we did want to talk very briefly, because even though neither of us are sports fans, we absolutely love sports movies. And I feel like Senna and Maradona are like two of the great sports movies now. And
let's end it there.
Yeah, like the
thank you for coming, everyone.
The core of a really good sports movie is you've got people who are outsiders, often people who are underprivileged, which we know wasn't Senna's case. And that rivalry, and the Senna rivalry was just epic. It was a bit, it felt like Apollo and Rocky. Like, that's what it felt like.
No higher praise.
Did you feel when making those movies influenced by the sports genre, or was it stranger than fiction how great those narratives were?
I mean, the only documentary that I remember seeing at the cinema about sport is When We Were Kings, the Muhammad Ali film, which is a brilliant film. And I love Muhammad Ali. And I remember thinking, you know, I don't want to see anyone pretending to be Muhammad Ali. I just want Muhammad Ali being Muhammad Ali. And it's one of those sort of things of when we made Senna, that was key. It was like, I know people had tried in the past to make a feature film about him. I think Antonio Banderas was supposed to play him, and Michael Mann was going to direct it. And thank God it never happened. You know, it's like, because I just, you know, people pretending to drive a car fast, I don't know if I'm bothered about that. Senna's genuinely doing it. He's risking it his life. He's got, you know, movie star looks. And he should be on the big screen. So, yeah, When We Were Kings was the only doc that I can think of. There's not many movies. There's a few other documentaries. Hoop Dreams is a great sporting doc. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Basketball. Fantastic film by Steve James. And that was a reference in a way, because he spent like 7 years following two young basketball players in America. And it's really about the American system of, you know, these poor kids, if they succeed, they can go to college because they're black. And they're from Chicago. If they don't, they're not going to get an education. So it's a really great film. I thoroughly recommend Hoop Dreams if you haven't seen it.
And what about fiction sports movies? What's your favourite? Or what stands out for you?
You're going to have to help
pantheon.
Me. I'm on a short list of, apart from Rocky that you've already mentioned.
The best.
Kathy, what's your favourite? You say your favourite.
My favourite sports movie is definitely League of Their Own.
League of Their Own?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Why? round of applause for A League of Their Own.
It's just an amazing movie. It's such a great cast.
I've not seen it. What's it about?
Too. It's about baseball.
What was that one? Yeah. Gina Davis,
Tom Hanks, and Madonna.
Popular.
It's such a good movie.
Big Madonna fans.
It does have the, you know, the story of the outsiders, because it's about women. They're only playing because it's World War II and the men are at war. And you end up with these two rivals who are sisters. So it's that core white rivalry. Like, they really have to prove themselves before the men get back from war. Like,
and it's about baseball.
It's about baseball, which I have no interest in.
Bad News Bears, the original one. Or Slapshot. Who's seen Slapshot? That's a good one. There you go. We're going back a bit here.
Two people.
Okay, we'll have to catch Slapshot.
Rollerball. I don't know.
This is the section of the podcast where we're just going to shout movie titles at you. And you
has anyone got a great one?
Best sports movies. Is that Rollerball?
Moneyball.
Oh, that's pretty boring, though. That's all about numbers. Yeah, that's not a sports
that's
movie.
That's a good movie.
That's an accountant movie.
The Mighty Ducks.
Yes. That's a great one.
And we wanted to get... Oh.
Take it.
Raging Bull.
Oh, my God. End of podcast, of course.
Right.
Martin Scorsese, Raging Bull. That's actually, I can't believe it. I don't even think about it as a boxing film, but of course it's my favourite film.
Well, the best sports movies are not defined by the sports, they're defined by how great the movie is.
It's the greatest one.
Yeah.
Boxing just works as a movie. You know, it's got the frame, it's got, you know, this restricted space. It's two people smashing the hell out of each other. And in black and white with Raging Bull. And it's made by the world's greatest filmmaker. So, you know, that is the one. No one's going to beat Raging Bull.
Okay, no more.
is Scorsese an influence for you then? You've mentioned him before.
I'm a huge Mike Scorsese fan. And actually, I'll give you the references. Raging Bull was the film that I thought about when we were making Senna. Because I looked at it and said, you know, Jake LaMotta had about 157 fights or something in his career. But how many fights can you put in one movie? And I think there are about 7 or 8. And each fight is different visually to the previous one. And each one is about forwarding the character. Somehow it's got to develop the character. So with Senna, we use that as a reference. So how many races can you have in a film about a Formula One driver? And actually it's about 7 or 8.
Oh, that's amazing.
And each one is there for a reason. Not because it's a brilliant bit of driving. It is that. But it's also about a key moment in his life and career. So Raging Bull was a really good reference also for Amy. How many songs can you have? You can't put every song she ever made. So you have to pick a certain number. And it just sort of around 7 or 8 is the maximum. And you have to pick the songs that somehow move her character on in order to take you to the next stage of the story. So I think Raging Bull is the one that is the reference for all great movies from now onwards.
Okay, brilliant.
Right.
And before we get to the audience Q&A, we wanted to say thank you so much for doing... We've never done a live show before, so we were just so thrilled.
I thought
thrilled.
This was a rehearsal.
It's the rehearsal. We're so thrilled to have had you come on and talk to us. It's just so fascinating. We could talk to you all day.
Yeah, and before we talk to the audience, what's next for you, Asif?
We're going to go and see something over there.
Great, right. Lana Del Rey tonight. Yeah, yeah.
Sons of Kenny, I think. Who else are we seeing? We're my wife and kids are there. We've got a few... Celeste. Yeah, we saw Celeste at Love Supreme. Yeah, there you go.
Brilliant. Okay. And now I'm sure the audience has got loads of questions for you. So Dave's going to jump down off the stage.
All right,
there.
I'll come down with the... No, can I come down with this? Oh, no, look, we have a little mic set up there. All right, who's got a question? Hands up if you want to ask us. Oh, my God, so many. All right.
You can just queue up at the mic.
Start with Kobe, because we know him, and then the man behind
up.
Kobe. Oh, it's Reese. Hello. It's just people we know.
We did not plan them. There.
Hi, guys. Big fan of the podcast. Well done.
Yeah, hi.
Asif, is there any fibre in your being that would have been pleased if Maradona had died before the film came out?
Oh, wow.
Dark.
Given that Amy...
Dark, man.
It's dark, but also it presents a different opportunity, a different story for the film. That's why it says any fibre in your being.
No,
you
be very careful how you answer this. I didn't want it to happen, but there was always a moment of saying it could happen. You know, it could happen at any point. You're thinking, I don't know what state he's in, because we would set up a interview and his people would say, oh, he's not in a good way right now, give it a few months, so we'd have to wait, and you just never knew. In his case, he'd generally leave one country and end up somewhere else, so he was fine, but right now he's not well right now, you know, so you just don't know how serious things are going to get. There is one really kind of sad thing. His first agent, Jorge Sister Spiller, who hired the two cameramen to film him, I was going to Argentina to interview him amongst other people in Buenos Aires. This is not funny at all. He did commit suicide.
Oh.
He killed himself. As you know, we had planned to interview him and we were going to fly to Buenos Aires, and then a few weeks before we flew there, he committed suicide. So this is real stuff. These are real people. That's the thing. You never know what's going on in people's personal lives when you're trying to make a film like this. So that's where you have to be very sensitive. You know, you don't know what you're dealing with. You don't know what the backstory is. But that actually happened.
Does anyone have a question that doesn't involve death and suicide? Yes, this man. Thank you. And while he's walking up to the microphone, I will fill this podcast silence with the sound of my own voice. And that's how you do a podcast.
Hi, Asif. Question regarding the Senna film. Were there any difficulties in getting the race footage? Was it politics or money? Because I know the FIA and Bernie Eccleston and everything tried to throw a cloud over anybody and retain the rights.
Yeah, we were dealing with Bernie Eccleston. So my producer, James Gay Reese, was the one who started that film off, and it took a long time to do the deal between Bernie Eccleston, the Formula One authorities, the Senna family, and Working Title and Universal Studios. So that deal took about a year,
wow,
at least, just while I was waiting to start on the film. So for about 9 months, I was working on the film and not being paid. So we were waiting for the deal to get signed. So it was very complicated. The really complicated bit was when I decided to do it entirely with Archive, and it wasn't something that I'd been budgeted for. We were like millions over budget every time I showed that mad 5-hour cut of clips. And so we had to renegotiate a contract with Bernie Eccleston, which not many people do. But actually, my producers were able to do it because he loved the film, and because of Senna, it happened. And we were able to get a deal so that we could do the entire film with Formula One footage. So, but it is a lot of money and politics, a little bit of art generally in there.
Anybody else? This man up here, racing up to the front. Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Do you have anyone in mind for your next documentary? Whether you wish to reveal or not.
Are you auditioning?
Yeah.
Is this it?
No.
I right now, I feel like if there's a subject matter, rather than doing a biography of a single person, I feel like it's kind of the state of politics. It's the state of what the hell is going on right now with like loads of fascists in power. So if I was going to do something, it's somehow connecting the dots maybe between all these people that various brilliant journalists at The Guardian have already been doing. That's the thing that seems most I'm most interested by. And if I were to give you an answer today, that it's something to do with what the hell is going on in the world. I don't think it's an accident. They're somehow all connected.
Mm. Ah. There you go. You haven't even made the film yet, and it's a hit.
Yeah, we love it.
I think I'd love to see a film about two podcasters, maybe like a married couple. Maybe they record their walks home from the, I don't know, from the movies. It's just go. Who knows?
It could be, you know, great.
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
I know this is like, I'm a compere, I shouldn't really be doing questions.
No, Andy, you are absolutely entitled.
Thank you. So you mentioned like boxing always being like the perfect film. Would you ever make a film, I know you've just said you're not going to do a biog right away, but do you ever think of doing a film about a boxer, and if so, which boxer?
Living or dead?
It's already been done when we were kings, but you know, my hero is Muhammad Ali, so it's just whether or not there's any way I could do anything that hasn't already been said about him or somehow connecting the dots. But I have a love-hate relationship with boxing. I grew up watching it, but obviously there's times when you're watching people getting brain damage and then you suddenly go off it when people get older. So now I'm quite troubled by it. I'm not really into kind of the MMA sort of stuff, people kicking each other in the head, so I've gone off it. But really, that would have been the one, if I could do something new on Muhammad Ali or get some access to him, he's the one. I don't think there's any other boxer that comes close, really.
What's your favourite sport, Asif?
Football, right. Liverpool.
Look at that.
I would say a Champions League final.
Would you like to make a Liverpool doc, or is that too close to the bone?
Too close, not interested. Right. I don't want to distract Jurgen Klopp in any way or form. I'd rather make one about Man City and destroy them from the inside. Tear them apart.
He's using his powers for evil.
Reveal the corruption at its heart.
Ooh. Wow. You should make
allegedly.
Definitely your
or
next
not.
One.
Yeah.
We got a scoop. The Daily Mail journalists are running to the phone.
I think we've time for one more question, if there's any more. Oh, we've got another one here.
As a football fan, do you think Maradona is the best player who's ever lived?
But the kind of time that I've been around, I never saw Pelé play. I didn't really see Cruyff play. But the reason why I think Maradona is because he did win the World Cup, which everyone would say it's the best case of a sort of a single player in a team sport taking an average team to win the World Cup. No one's ever come close in the World Cup. He then is of an era, which I grew up in, where you only had a couple of foreign players in each team. Okay, so he took a team, Napoli, that have never won anything before, never won anything since, and he won the most difficult league in the world, which is in Italy in the 80s. No one else will go to a team that's not guaranteed to win. So that's the reason why I think he's the greatest. Because if whoever you want to name now who's great went to Bournemouth and won the league in 3 years, that's great. Then they would be the best player in the world. But if you have nine or... How many strikers have Barcelona got now? You know, they can't put them on the pitch. If they're all in one team and they're guaranteed to win the league, I think it's a bit boring. It's a bit boring. And so really, the richest teams win the league every year in England, in Italy, in Spain, in Germany. It's the same teams. It's a fix. Whereas he did it with a team that never won, and I think that's what makes him the best. He did it when football was nasty and they literally would try and break your legs. And the top scorer in Diego Maradona's time, he scored 15 goals in one season. Now, if they score less than 45, it's been a bad year, you know. So for me, that's why Diego's the one.
And he did all that off his tits on coke 4 nights
a
week.
And he didn't train. Yeah. Exactly. So as he said, not me, as he said, just imagine how good I could have been.
I have one more question before we finish up. There is a lot of footage in this movie of Diego dancing, right?
He's a great dancer.
Was there ever a 6-hour cut which is just him dancing? And will you release it and call it Diego Dancing?
There is a lot of footage of him dancing and singing. He loves to sing. He does a lot of karaoke. There is more footage to come. This comes out on DVD or Blu-ray, whatever the home entertainment version is. And there's a lot of great stuff of him young. When he goes to Barcelona, there's a whole section about that and actually when his leg is broken and how he deals with it. So before he gets to Naples, you know, his career is over. His story is one of death and resurrection constantly. You know, it's over, he's failed, it's a disaster, and then he makes a huge comeback. Then it's all over and he comes back again. And so there is a lot more of him. And I'll just check if we've got enough dancing in there. We might add another sequence just
please
for you.
Do. Because
you're right, there's never enough of
so
Diego
dancing.
Wait,
one more question. I've got to know about this karaoke, right? How you watched all those Diego karaoke nights. What was the best? What was the go-to classic?
I mean, like, they're all Neapolitan songs, though. So like, come on, you know, they're like really kind of emotional when he's crying, and it's like they're beautiful.
He never did
songs.
Total Eclipse of the Heart.
No. There's no like, you know, kind of Europe or something like that. No kind of 80s stuff. Although he did like, you know, he did like Queen and various people like that. But there is, you know, the very beginning of the film. Did you notice that bit where he's on stage with a musician? Anyone recognize who he's on stage with?
No.
Anybody? He's on stage with Eddie Grant. There you go, Eddie Grant in Buenos Aires. So he loves, what I like about Diego Maradona though, he's like, he loves his reggae, he loves all sorts of music, he loves his Neapolitan folk songs, he loves a bit of kind of stadium rock. He'll sing everything and dance to anything. As his girlfriend said, one of the reasons she fell for him was because he was a really good dancer to any kind of music, as she said.
Yeah, he's crazy hips for a really small stout man.
He's a dancer.
Yeah,
he is a dancer who happened to play football.
Lovely. Asif, thank you so much for coming
thank
here and
so
joining
much.
Us. Big round
total
of applause.
Pleasure. Thank you everyone for coming.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you everyone. All right.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Jessie Cruikshank, and I've always been told I have a face for podcasting. So I launched a podcast. It's called Phone a Friend, because each week I'll break down the biggest stories in pop culture. But when I have questions, I get to phone a friend. I'll phone a royal watcher to find out why Prince Harry is acting like a real housewife. I'll phone a tween to please explain Euphoria. And maybe I'll even phone a Backstreet Boy to find out if I still have a chance. I don't? Okay. New episodes drop every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.